to Four Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated podcast for all things comic book, manga, and associated sequential graphic media. With me today are Rob.
Hello.
And Andrew.
I can't hear a single thing that Nick's saying, so I'm just guessing that this is the right time to speak.
And you guessed correctly. There are no prizes.
That's good. I just keep talking like this. Neither of them will ever suspect a thing.
I wanted prizes.
Well, you should up the budget for the show then.
That's a great point.
This is going to be one of those Mr. Magoo episodes, isn't it?
What, another one, you mean?
Yeah.
Right, let's put these listeners out of their misery. Have we got any news?
I think old man Andrew has the news.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think about it. That I'm basically now yelling at dang kids with the loud music. In fact, no old people. You're the one with the old, with the loud music, playing your bloody Ella Fitzgerald so loud the whole neighbourhood can hear it.
No, it's because we played our music so loud that you lot are rebelling with bland shite like Coldplay.
Look at the stars.
Sing about a colour.
God, that's the most bitter act of revenge I've ever heard of.
Repeat till I die.
Oh, God, you mean like the Travis chorus? If you sing, 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 sing some more. Damn you, sing!
So have we got any comic news, Andrew, or what?
Oh, you're putting a lot of pressure on me.
No, I'm asking you a simple question. If you answer no, the podcast will be over before you know it.
But what if I answer you?
Well, then it'll go on a bit longer.
Well, then I'm sorry to say the answer is yes.
Sorry, listeners, I tried.
Yes, you were very trying there, Mick.
Now, before we go any further, is the news that we've got, like, actual news?
I mean, that's... Whoa. That's not big enough too much.
Is this news in the way that, say, you know, I am a newsreader because I read the news, but not in the same way that people on TV are newsreaders?
Is this news that goes beyond Marvel have decided to reboot their entire universe again to celebrate a whole week since they last rebooted their entire universe again?
So in today's lead story, I had a nice sandwich today and also petted a dog. But yes, but we do have actual for realsies news.
Ooh.
I mean, it's still Marvel reboot stuff. And more importantly, part of our larger bracket of Marvel, the worst and everything they do is terrible. So they are launching a new series starring X-23, who, for all you Marvel fans out there, might say, but wait, isn't she currently starring as Wolverine in Wolverine? Yep, that's all getting ended and thrown away.
So they're getting rid of Wolverine. As an X-23 as Wolverine. And
yeah. So basically, that whole series that Tom Taylor's been doing about X-23 saying, hey, I don't want to be X-23 anymore, because that's basically just the designation I was given when I was a murdery assassin girl. And so I'm going to move on with my life and take up the mantle of Wolverine and do all kinds of great stuff with it and star in like one of the new genuinely fantastic series that Marvel's putting out right now. We're going to end that so that we can go back to the way things were when the character started.
Oh, joy.
Hooray, it's the Marvel method in action.
See, I have a theory, right? Have you guys seen that story about Stan Lee's finances?
I have not seen this story. What is it?
Apparently, Stan Lee's finances are in complete disarray because of so many people taking advantage of him, right?
Like Sony, Fox, Universal.
Well, not just them, just people in general, right? And so I reckon maybe Marvel doing so many reboots is different people trying to hide their embezzling of his finances.
Could be.
Maybe that's why C.B. Cebulski pretended to be somebody else when he first started.
Maybe. Or maybe comics are written by and written for people desperately trying to recapture the magic of getting into a comic book when you're a wee nipper and not realizing that a lot of that magic was less to do with the actual quality of the comic and more to do with just you at the time.
Mm.
But no, it's going to be great. We're going to get Logan back. He's going to be all hairy. He's going to be the best at what he does. And what he does is star in subpar knockoffs of Japanese revenge cinema. And
there's no bitterness in what you're saying, is there?
What if C.B. Cebulski himself writes a Wolverine series?
Oh, God. That's just a horrifying thing to think of.
Maybe it'll turn out that the superhero Sunfire was actually Wolverine all along. And I'll say, but it's okay, guys, that I'm pretending to be this Japanese superhero because I've lived in Japan for a long time.
There is only one Japanese superhero, and his name is Godzilla. Or her name is Godzilla. Since it's never actually... we don't actually know.
Shall we, just to make the editor's life easier, shall we just call it The Name is Godzilla?
Yeah, The Name is Godzilla.
Yes, because Godzilla was a Marvel property once upon a time.
Exactly. See, that was the bit they called it. They said Godzilla King of the Monsters. And I'm like, this is the modern age. We'd say, you know, we'd say Ruler of the Monsters.
I mean, Godzilla Monster Monarch does have a good ring to it.
Actually, it does, doesn't it?
Now, retroactively, I'm mad at another Marvel series. Why would you call it Monsters Unleashed and your character Kid Kaiju when he could be the Monster Monarch instead?
There's a Japanese story called Master of Monsters, which he could have been called that as well.
Also a good name. The Machiavelli of Monstrosities.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's it. We're cancelling the rest of the show. It's now purely about making alliterative monster puns. getting back on track slightly.
Yep.
We'll say one thing in favour of the series. Well, we're out by one cabal who I'm not really familiar with, but the writer is Mariko Tamaki, who did that She-Hulk series a while ago.
Ah.
You know, the one where it's basically about Jennifer Walters suffering from PTSD.
I like that series.
Yeah, so I think definitely got potential to be a good series. It's just the Marvel, everything we build is a sandcastle and all that you love will be swept away.
No, I like the She-Hulk series because it showed, it actually had, you know, a lot more depth to it, and it actually had the, you know, the character of She-Hulk in a human form just going through that process of trying to recover, of trying to find some normality in her life, and being afraid of becoming She-Hulk.
And I'm pretty sure that's all gone now as well, because she's just going to be on the Avengers.
Yeah, she's... I hate the fact that they keep regressing her to try and make her more like she was in the 90s. I'm like, just don't.
Yeah, instead of doing anything interesting, just saying, what if Hulk but girl?
Yeah, what if Hulk but girl and horny was She-Hulk in the 90s, remember?
Oh, she wasn't. She was horny.
Be glad you missed the 90s, Mick. We've said it before.
I didn't miss the entire decade. I just missed the comic books.
I mean, the comic book 90s.
Okay.
I'm not on about the whole decade. I'm just saying the comic books. Be glad you missed those.
It was all shoulder pads and improbable spikes.
Oh, yeah. And was it... I didn't understand the costumes. It was like, how long are the legs on those women? It's like it literally went from there were no hips on the women; it just went leg, shoulders.
Yeah. Well, if the artist is Rob Liefeld, the answer to that question is infinitely long. Stretch off.
Oh, Mr. Liefeld, who couldn't draw feet, so he put points on instead.
You know, there's some like weird comic book microverse where it's just like female characters' legs stretching on into infinity.
It sounds like something you'd see on, you know, those ancient Greek vases. Anyway. Any more news?
Liefeld just turned around and said, actually, I was drawing in the style of the ancient Greeks.
Maybe he was. That would explain all the muscles.
Yep. We have got, though, something I'm kind of trying to do more of is balance out all our bitter cynicism with some news I'm genuinely excited about.
Okay.
And this week, it's that DC are going to be doing a 6-issue miniseries for Plastic Man.
Oh!
Freaking the best character.
I like Plastic Man.
He is. He's a wacky, stretchy guy.
And, yeah, who doesn't like a wacky, stretchy guy?
Yeah, but actually, you know, this is kind of related to the first story, because Tom Taylor, who did All New Wolverine, also writes Injustice 2, and he writes a fantastic Plastic Man.
Yes, he does. Plastic Man in Injustice 2 is very, very good.
He is. But also that's irrelevant because this new series is going to be written by Gail Simone. Which is, I know, that sharp intake of breath, basically.
Gail Simone writing Plastic Man? Oh. Because she does good comedy.
Yeah, she does just like amazing kind of slapstick, but also quite dark comedy.
Did you read any of her Deadpool stuff? And Agent X, the first, I think she did the first 7 issues of Agent X as well, which I've got signed by her.
I think Rob might be a bit of a fanboy.
Just of Gail Simone's comedy work.
Like, I just remember that final issue of Deadpool. Like, he's trying to defuse the bomb.
Yeah.
He's like, but it's okay, I wrote the code down on my arm. And then, like, looks at his arm and goes, no, wait, my other arm. Then looks over, and just his arms lie, like, on the floor across the room.
Yeah. And there's that whole backstory about that boy with doing the big X and everything like that, and then... that guy, whose name is Alex Hayden, suddenly appears at Deadpool's secretary's apartment. And he's got a healing factor.
Oh, Agent X.
Yeah, I liked Agent X. I thought Agent X was funny.
He was. I might add that series to the list of things I want to go back and reread, along with Secret Six, which is possibly one of my favourite comics ever.
Yeah, I like Secret Six. Secret Six is just... I think if I had to go with funniest comics that I've read in recent years, Secret Six, Agent X, the original Agent X run, that is, those 14 issues. Next Wave, absolutely Next Wave. And, The Great Lakes Avengers.
Oh, yeah, Great Lakes Avengers. Gail Simone should do a Great Lakes Avengers reboot as well.
Yes. Oh, and Mockingbird.
Gail Simone should do a Mockingbird reboot as well.
Should we just give all comics to Gail Simone and just say, just run everything for us?
I mean, I think, first of all, what we do is we experiment in nuclear radiation to the point where we can give people X-Men-level mutations and turn Gail Simone into Multiple Man. Just make an army of Gail Simones and they write all the comics.
You do realise if we did that, she would turn into a supervillain.
Look, the world isn't in a great state right now, Rob. Are you saying that having Gail Simone run the world would be at least as bad as things are now, but most likely much better?
No, I'm saying in the heart of every comic book writer is a supervillain waiting to come out. You and I both know this.
Basically, we're just extrapolating from the fact that we would do very bad things if we had superpowers.
Yes, we would. Just like every other comic book fan in the world. I know we all say, oh yeah, we'd use our powers for good. Yeah, right.
In my defense, right, I have no superpowers and I still do bad things.
Yeah, like buying all of Civil War 2.
You had to bring that up, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Maybe that can be mixed like a horrifying origin story. He was driven irreversibly insane. And vowed revenge on the entire
community. It's a retconned origin story for the Joker.
No, not the Joker. Mick suddenly becomes the Mad Thinker because he's still buffering. He's still trying to figure out what happened in Civil War 2.
I know what happened in Civil War 2. I serviced a small third world country's national debt. That's what happened in Civil War 2. That was the whole purpose behind Civil War 2.
Yeah. No, my version of you as the Mad Thinker is you just walking around shouting at people and telling them that you're trying to think here, keep quiet, and then just beating them up.
Hold on. That's how the meetups go on a Saturday.
I know. Anyway, do we have any other news?
Yes, we do. Oh, since we're on DC, but we're going to swing that pendulum back the other way. Rob, I've got some really good news for you.
Is DC heading to Crazy Town again?
They are taking that train right back to Crazy Town. DC and Hanna-Barbera are doing more team-ups.
Oh, God, no. You guys can field them if they ever appear. I am not touching them. I'm done.
Having all of them. On May 30th, we are getting the Aquaman Jabberjaw special by Dan Abnett.
Oh, God, no.
There is actually one that I quite like the sound of.
Oh, I have a backup by Jeff Park and Scott Collins, starring Captain Caveman, the Spectre, and Shazam, like the old wizard, not Captain Marvel.
I want the next one. I want Black Lightning Hong Kong Fooey Special by Brian Hill.
Oh, God.
Yes. I'm genuinely quite excited for that one. It's going to be funkadelic. Much like that one's backup feature, which is again by Parker and Collins, featuring Jason Blood before he became Etrigan, and the Funky Phantom. I have my knowledge of, but it's now my favourite cartoon character.
Oh.
Also getting the Flash Speed Buggy Special by Scott Lobdell with art by Brett Booth and Norm Ratmond. Ooh, which is going to have the Wally West Flash, aka the real Flash.
Hint, hint.
Get rid of Barry DC. He should have stayed dead. And also the Superhuman Dynamutt Special, written by Peter J. Tomasi, with art by Fernando Passerin and Auclair Albert.
Okay. You guys can fail those. I'm done with the DC crossovers. I got enough stick from you guys for doing them.
I'll do the Hong Kong Fooey one and nothing else.
I'm doing it. Mine, I want it.
No! Hong Kong Fooey is my childhood, not yours.
I got the reruns.
I got the originals.
I got the stuffed toy.
Yes, but you're not allowed stuffed toys anymore, are you, Rob?
No, I'm not. I had a Superman stuffed toy
because
when I was a kid.
Because of what you do with them.
Put them on a shelf and love them and care for them. Make sure that they're in pristine condition so they retain their value.
That's what you do with them now, isn't it?
No, that's what I've always done with them. I think you're mistaken me with one of those strange people.
No, you are definitely one of those strange people.
No, I'm the other type of strange person.
All right, okay.
What was that, Andrew?
Nothing. I buy a headset.
So, anyway, I've got a piece of news. A little bit of manga news.
Ew. It is a blue moon, isn't it?
Yes, it is a blue moon. Kazuhiro Fujita is a very strange manga creator, and he has a very strange take on his art style and the stories he writes. But one of his stories recently got readapted for anime called Ushio and Tora, did really well, and so they're actually adapting another one of his manga for anime now, which is called Karakuri Circus, and I am really excited about this one because Karakuri Circus is the story of... it's a story about a disease that's going around the world. It appears at random, and the only way to kind of hold off the symptoms of the disease and not die is to get someone to make you laugh. And no one knows what's spreading the disease except for a few people who are fighting against this thing that's spreading the disease. And the thing that's spreading the disease is a mysterious circus that appears in different parts of the world. And the circus is populated by creepy clowns who are also automatons who are sentient. And and they are searching for they are searching for something that will make their queen smile, because their queen never smiles.
No, I'm not having it.
It's kind of fantasy and horror and creepy clowns and all that good stuff and action and lots and lots and lots of violence.
Yeah, no, but let's just cycle back to the creepy robot clowns.
Yep. No, not creepy robot clowns, creepy automaton clowns.
Oh, they are like clockworky.
Some of them are, yeah.
Oh, like weird and jerky, and I don't like it. Too far.
Have we just found Andrew's kryptonite?
It's not kryptonite if it's a rational fear.
No, I think the fact that if it is in fact your kryptonite, that's what makes your fear of it a rational fear.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, I guess it's not rational for Superman to be afraid of the thing that's literally radioactive to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a logical fear.
I can't go over there. Why not, Clark? Because I'm cryptophobic.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if somebody had a fear of spiders, you go, oh, look at the little money spider. It's cute. You're like, I'm not afraid of those spiders. It's those big hairy ones that are on that wall behind you. The ones that are like 1 foot across and look like they could eat your face. Those are the ones I'm scared of.
And also they have clown makeup on.
Yes.
That being said, the idea of like a circus populated entirely by spiders is actually kind of endearing.
I think they had something similar to that. It was called Arachnophobia, that movie, wasn't it?
No, this is nice and sweet. Like, there's a bunch of spiders all crammed into a tiny car, and then like, all the spiders in the stand, and they're clapping their little four legs together, and wait, no, this is horrifying. I don't like it anymore, Rob. Oh, look, there's like one in the cannon. And there's like a spider flying through the air, and there's one like skittering across a tightrope.
Yes, spiders bouncing on the backs of horses. The spider lion tamer. It's got a chair and a whip in each hand.
But then one of the spiders in the audience is a gangster spider, and he shoots the tightrope walking spider, and it falls off and it dies. And then the horse spider's son is heartbroken, but then Bat Spider comes in and takes him as an apprentice.
Yes, and so we have the dynamic spider duo.
I'm going to tell my mum you two are weird.
Meanwhile, from the planet the spanet Crypto Spider, which is about to explode.
I don't like this world we've created.
I think we've just created DC's Spider-Verse.
Oh, but the Flash would be a spider that can run really quickly.
Yes. Oh. Do you know what I think it is? I think DC is lacking a kind of Spider-Man character, and that's why we're just imagining this.
You know, No, I was going to say next to that, the weird robot clowns don't seem so frightening, but yes, they do.
They're still frightening. On that note, shall we take a break?
Yes, let's. Please, yes.
Oh, but don't you want to hear the exciting news that incredibly minor Spider-Man character Nightwatch might be getting a movie?
Oh, no. What?
Oh.
What?
Oh, no, we don't. Never mind.
I mean, that's just my answer. You know, you asked the question, did I want to hear that an incredibly minor Spider-Man character was getting a movie? The answer was no.
In my defense, I clicked on this story on comicbookmovie.com because it said Spider-Man spin-off Nightwatch reportedly moving forward with the old boy director. Unfortunately, that was just the cutoff, and the full title is Spider-Man spin-off Nightwatch reportedly moving forward with old boy director Spike Lee at the helm. Of the American old boy film.
Yeah. If it had been the Korean old boy film, you would have been cheering, wouldn't you?
Rose Page.
See, my answer to that story is still, what? Nightwatch is getting a movie?
Yeah, Nightwatch, who, if you're curious about and want to read more, pick up an issue of Spawn.
Yes.
They're the same character.
Yeah.
The Geek Show is the largest independent podcast network out there. And to be independent, we need a little bit of help every now and again. So if you want something to show your love of The Geek Show, head over to thegeekshow.co.uk, click on the shop and buy some of our lovely wares. Buy them all.
Hi, I'm Destiny Blue, the anime artist, and I like drawing and The Geek Show, which you are currently listening to.
Hello, do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films, and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out The Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well-staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week, and do it reasonably well.
Welcome back, and now it's time for the business side of things. It's time to get down to comics and manga, and we're starting off with Mick.
Yes. So, I have a question for you two gentlemen.
Yes.
Have you ever wondered what the moon gets up to when you can't see it in the sky?
All the time. I bet it's plotting something, the dirty commie.
No.
See, I always thought the moon was just a piece of rock floating in the sky. I didn't realise it had any kind of sentience for years.
Well, until because the other thing is that some people believe it's just the back of the sun.
Yes, they do, which is just weird. I mean, it was Marvel Comics that opened my eyes to the fact that the moon may be sentient in some way because I discovered Ego, the living planet.
Yeah, well, our moon is actually a secret agent.
What?
Our moon is actually a secret agent.
As in kind of James Bond type secret agent walks into casinos and goes, the name's Moon, Rick Moon or something like that.
Almost, except he doesn't talk.
Of course, because that would blow his cover.
Because he's a tall, skinny guy with a moon for a head.
So he's the strong, silent type, then?
Very much so. So, listeners may not be familiar with Moon, the comic from beyondthebunker.com. How's that for an independent comic company name? It's been fairly low on the radar, mainly because it's, until relatively recently, only been available at conventions. They have now started doing some deals with a few shops. You can also buy it online at the website, beyondthebunker.com. The first volume consists of 6 issues, of which only 5 are currently available. And it's really difficult to try and figure out when the next issue is going to come out, because the first issue's got a copyright notice of 2011, and issue 5 came out in June 2017. Moon issues appear to be an annual event. But yes, so we have The Moon. There's 5 issues available at the moment. It starts off in 12 AD at a henge somewhere in the south of England.
Ooh. I wonder what henge it could be.
It just says a henge. It's not specific. But basically, the druid are planning, because there's an alignment of the moon and the earth that only happens once in an age. And what they're trying to do is trying to marry the spirit of the moon into a human body as part of this ritual. And that combination being will then protect the land of Albion. So that's what they're trying to do.
But also, isn't the moon always in alignment with the earth?
No. It's a very specific alignment. I mean, it is always kind of in alignment, but this is like all sorts of other crap is lining up as well.
Oh, so it's like all of the planets have aligned or stuff like that.
Let me get this. Let me see if I can get the actual detail.
Are you sure the druids weren't just stoned?
Well, that's that element.
And that's how it got the name Stonehenge.
Stonehenge.
Andrew saw where I was going with that.
Yeah. I did. Well done. I actually quite liked that one.
Right, so here we go. It is a most sacred ritual, one which may occur but once in an age, a full moon upon the 12th day of the 12th month of the 12th year, when the walls between earth and sky are thin and spirits may walk between worlds. There you go. That's okay. The strange alignment.
Which calendar?
Oh, for crying out loud, does it really matter? It's a comic.
I know, I'm teasing.
Yeah, there's one thing our audience expect. It's pedantry.
Anyway, in reference to your comments about druidic substance abuse, there's been a bit of over-imbibing of ale. And needless to say, the ceremony goes a bit wrong. And then we're thrust headlong into the 21st century, and we have Moon and his partner investigating this murder. Okay.
Please say his partner is called Buttcheek.
No. And from that point on, you have possibly the craziest set of secret agent shenanigans is what I'm going to dub it, but in real bizarre fashion. And they meet a traffic warden called Shades Rodriguez.
Called what?
Shades Rodriguez.
Shades Rodriguez?
Yes.
Okay.
Because his surname's Rodriguez, Rodriguez, and he wears sunglasses.
Which, that must be a relief for Mr. and Mrs. Rodriguez.
Yeah.
They took a gamble with that first name, but it's paid off.
Absolutely.
Oh, maybe you're pronouncing it wrong because his surname is Rodriguez, so maybe it's not Shades, maybe it's pronounced Shades.
No, trust me, it's pronounced Shades. Who's read this comic, me or you?
Who's foreign, me or, who's foreign, me or you? Answer, we both are.
No, Rob, when we refer to you as the alien, that's not what we mean. So there are 5 issues in various variants, including issue 5, which comes in a rather swanky gatefold swimsuit edition cover. I kid you not.
I must see this.
I just wasn't expecting that. Of all the sentences I thought I'd hear.
That wasn't one of them. So, yes, there is a wraparound gatefold swimsuit edition cover of Moon, issue 5. There are variants of quite a few of them, and they're available in a limited number of shops at the moment. I think I've figured out why there's such a big gap between issues of Moon. It's because the artist is too busy doing mashups with other superhero franchises. So there's a Batmoon print that you can get. Black Moonther. There's...
Please say there's a Moon Axe Cop mashup.
There's an Amoongus Assemble poster, which is absolutely brilliant.
Oh, please say there's a Moon Axe Cop mashup. Moon versus Axe Cop would be amazing.
The Flash mashup is called Floosh. You've got Moondians of the Moonluxy and an Optimoon Prime mashup. There's a villain, obviously, as there always are in these kind of comics, called Bun Bun Warmheart, who's a vicious teddy bear. There's a sentient bike. There's two agents from the toy safety agency who want to shut Bum Bum down because he's a toy that can hurt people. There's the chief, and there's Ray Barton, who is initially Moon's partner and is replaced by Shade Rodriguez in the course of the adventure. And it's just surreal. In a way that is almost impossible to describe. The art style's quite nice. There's some lovely colouring. And, you know, how can you not love a comic that's got a gatefold wraparound swimsuit edition? It's just a shame it's not a bit more regular in its release schedule. I can't turn around to you and say, you know, I'm looking forward to issue 6. I mean, I am. I just don't know whether I'll actually, like, still be capable of reading when it comes out. They do have another title called Reverend, which looks like it may be to the Preacher what Moon is to James Bond.
See, it depends which James Bond you're talking about. If you're talking about the modern James Bond movies, then I can understand. But if you're talking about, do you remember the original Casino Royale movie?
No, we're talking about the earlier official James Bond movies.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so...
Timothy Dalton. We're specifically talking about Timothy Dalton, I have decided.
No, we are talking significantly earlier than Timothy Dalton, because Timothy Dalton was when they tried to bring it back and make it a bit grittier and realer.
Yep.
And I'm talking... Dalton talks about Timothy Dalton.
Even though he actually was in... one of the better Bond movies of the time, of that particular era.
He was, I joke, but I kind of like
Timothy Dalton was in one of the better films of the Timothy Dalton era.
No, of that particular era, because he was only in two films, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of era of Roger Moore and Timothy Dalton and, Pierce Brosnan, that sort of thing.
Oh, what, you mean the bad era?
Yeah, he was in one of the better movies of the bad era.
Hey, right, okay. GoldenEye was good for the time.
I was waiting for you to finish that sentence.
Even if it was just a trailer for Skyfall. So yeah, that's Moon. Available at selected comic shops, including our friends at Geek Corner. They have one complete set signed. And the other nice thing is the deal that they've got with the creators is that the signed sets are sold at cover price. So no one's trying to rip you off for a scrawled signature.
Excellent.
So, yeah, that's Moon. And please, Beyond the Bunker, if you're listening, finish number 6.
Yes. Come on, guys. Mick doesn't have long left.
No, no. Okay.
Actually, finish, I'm just number on my six. Health report. I've got years in me.
Yeah. Finish number 6 or Mick will moon you.
And that's not a pretty sight.
You have been warned.
There's even Dead Moon. I kid you not, there is Dead Moon.
I'm not going to even say anything after what I'm just saying.
You mean like as a piece of art?
Yes.
Yeah, you confused us there, Mick.
I thought this was still a reference to you doing the mooning.
No.
So that's all right, what, now as well.
Strange, horrifying dead patch. Oh. Sorry, Mr. Snowden. You've been diagnosed with
dead
bum.
Is that what they meant when they said touching the void? Anyway. Andrew, do you want to go next or do you want me to?
Oh, go on then, I'll do it. So, I have been reading a little something from Marvel. It is Astonishing X-Men, Life of X, which collects issues 1-6 of the Astonishing X-Men series. And it's written by Charles Soule I should probably just explain first, the whole concept of the series is it's like a 12-issue limited series with each issue has a different artist. So in these 6 issues, we have Jim Chung, Mike Diodato, Ed McGuinness, Carlos Pacello, Ramon Rosanas, and Mike Del Mundo. And the series, it's pretty direct with the plot. The Shadow King has come back. He's possessing a bunch of people's minds, making them all deaded and stuff. It's all part of his plan so that he can re-manifest in the real world and, bring about one of those bad time apocalypses that we're not a general fan of.
Yeah.
So, to stop him, a team of X-Men has to travel into the astral plane to fight him. And those X-Men are Wolverine, Rogue, Gambit, Phantom X, and, who at first seems to be Beast, but is actually Mystique.
So, which one was Phantom X again? I've forgotten.
Phantom X, are you all familiar with, the 1920s French comic character Diabolik?
Yes.
Basically, Phantom X was Grant Morrison saying, that character's cool, I'm just going to do him.
Oh, yeah, I remember Phantom X now.
Yeah, he's French, wears a trench coat, got some guns.
Yes.
Then, also on the team, we've got Psylocke, who's kind of basically serving as the psychic link to get them all in the astral plane. And Bishop and Archangel, who are basically guarding her while all this is going on. And actually, I read the first 2 issues of this a little while ago and talked about it a bit on Twitter. And I really like those issues. I like that it's kind of... It's got a sort of nostalgic feel to it, in that it's very big and bombastic and just straight into the action. But it's also got that classic X-Men thing of everyone's going through some personal issues and there's lots of tension between members. Obviously, Gambit and Rogue are exes. Wolverine's doing his whole, ooh, I'm an old man now and I watched everyone die. Psylocke and Archangel are also exes, but with the added complication of the fact that Archangel could just snap at any moment and try and murderize everyone. That's just, it's good, soap opera mixed with crazy comic book action.
It's basically what you want from the X-Men then.
Yeah, basically.
And also what you want from, say, the Fantastic Four.
I don't know, I feel like the Fantastic Four have a lot less kind of personal strife. Because they're just like a family who argue sometimes.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe less of the melodrama, but more of the kind of the family thing.
Yeah, the sometimes they get on each other's nerves, but they love each other deep down.
Yeah, and at the end, Reed just he just turns to camera and gives a wink and a thumbs up.
I miss the Fantastic Four.
Yeah. although they may be coming back.
Oh, please, God, say it's not in a film.
No. Marvel might actually, because Marvel have the rights to the Fantastic Four if all the deal goes through, don't they? And
But I think that's kind of not as firm as it was.
Well, they did that little run of Ben Grimm and Johnny Storm looking for Susan and Reed, didn't they?
Indeed, they did. So who knows?
Yep.
But anyway, back to this. Like I said, I really liked the first 2 issues, but then I feel like, especially say issues 3-5, that they kind of just that they drag on a bit. Because I mean, this entire storyline is just the X-Men are in the astral plane trying to stop the Shadow King, and then Wolverine and Gambit get possessed, and so Bishop and Archangel have to fight them. And it just feels like it should be a 4-issue thing. And I feel like what's happened is because Marvel are obsessed with writing for trades now. They've said, actually, Charles, can you pad this out an extra 2 issues so we can release it all as 1 book?
Yeah.
And it just leads to a lot of issues where not much seems to happen. And also what I feel is a really big missed opportunity is the art. Because when they released the first issue of this, I remember the whole selling point was them saying, look, this is this series. It's basically a showcase for all our top artists. And it's even a plot which revolves around the X-Men going into a place designed entirely based on imagination.
Yeah.
So you'd think it would basically, like...
blow your mind.
Yeah, it should be the artists getting the chance to, like, really stretch their muscles. And I feel like a lot of it isn't. Like, I'd say Mike Diodato and Mike Del Mundo, they're the ones who kind of run with it. Like, Diodato's issue, there's this great concept where, like, the X-Men are trapped, so watching a stage play of all their sort of top hits, as it were. They've got stuff like the Dark Phoenix saga, and then the founding of the X-Men. But then, like, it all starts shifting about. So instead of, there's a bit where it's Colossus and Kitty Pryde reenacting Romeo and Juliet. But then suddenly it's, like, Rogue and Gambit in Kitty and Colossus's costumes. And that's fun. And Mike Del Mundo, well, just like everything he draws is this crazy swirl of pastel colours. And it looks great. But a lot of the other issues... It kind of feels like they're just conforming to a house style.
When was this made?
Oh, literally, this is a series that's still running right now.
Ah, it's a pretty recent thing then.
Yeah, it's pretty recent. Which I think makes sense because Marvel are now very writer-focused rather than artist-focused.
Okay.
Because, like, remember a few weeks ago I did that Tales to Astonish?
Yeah.
But, like, that was very art-heavy, so, like, every other page was some, like, big bombastic scene, like some kind of Renaissance painting, and you don't really get any of that with this. It feels like what's happened is the artists have been given a script and said, okay, this is what you're working on, draw this. Whereas I feel what should have happened is they said, okay, this is like a vague outline we want for this story, and we're just going to let you fill in the details, so go wild.
Yeah, I get that.
So yeah, to be honest, a lot of it's just a bit disappointing.
So kind of halfway between recommend and not recommend for you then, I suppose.
So, I wouldn't say I'd not recommend. It's still good, I would say. Like, it's a fairly solid story. Lots of strong character work.
Yeah.
It's just, I feel like more could have been done with it.
Okay. So, me then, yeah?
Yep, you then.
So, I have another thing from Marvel, and this is Venom Lethal Protector, all the way from the early 90s, 1992 in particular. And obviously, there's a Venom movie coming out at some point with Tom Hardy in it. So, this is
what a coincidence.
Yeah, this is the first, this is the collected six issue miniseries that came out in 92 called Venom Lethal Protector. And it is the first outing of Venom as a solo character. And in it, Eddie Brock has gone back to the West Coast. He's gone back to San Francisco. And he's gone back to try and find a place where he belongs. Him and Peter Parker have basically... They haven't buried the hatchet, so to speak, but they've agreed not to get in each other's way. Basically, in the Spider-Man comics, Peter saved Eddie Brock's ex-wife, who he still had feelings for. Eddie and the symbiote have become very, very close. They speak as we rather than I now. So he's pretty much well merged with the symbiote. And so he's moved to San Francisco, well away from Spider-Man, well away from all of that. But he can't seem to get away from trouble because he is literally an escaped convict and he was convicted of murder. So everybody's still out to get him, including the father of the prison guard who he killed by accident. And so Eddie finds underneath one of the parks in San Francisco, he finds a community of people living in what looks to be a town underneath the park. And so he gets on good terms with them, fights off some mechanical diggers in human form, various things like that. He doesn't really understand what's going on. He knows big business wants to flatten the town and build stuff there. Nobody else knows the town exists except the people who were homeless or, you know, live under bridges, stuff like that. And it's a weird comic because it's trying to portray Eddie Brock, trying to portray Venom as a kind of anti-hero. And I do empathize with Venom a lot more in this than I did with Venom before this. But it feels very lacking. because it also highlights just how callous a character Venom is. You know, he says he's holding back on killing people, but if you throw someone hard enough against the corner of a wall, they're pretty much dead, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about the wall, I'm talking about the corner, spine to corner, you know, checkmate.
No, it's fine. If I've learned anything from playing Batman Arkham Asylum, it's that if you toss a man off the roof of a building, he goes unconscious.
Yeah, that's true. Just like you can sense his pulse and everything.
Actually, was it this show where we came up with the canon? It's just Alfred feeding him false information, going, yes, Master Bruce, he's definitely still alive.
Basically, God. Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah. Anyway, Venom is also being hunted by various other people because of his symbiote, and he gives birth to 5 baby Venoms who are very, very different, and so he has to then team up with Spider-Man, with Peter Parker, to beat these baby Venoms and rescue this town of innocent people who've done nothing wrong other than being poor and homeless in America. Peter, on the other hand, is in San Francisco because he's seen the reports of Eddie being in San Francisco, and he can't understand why Eddie would go there, even though he actually himself talks about the agreement between him and Eddie and how Eddie has honored the agreement, but he still can't trust him because Eddie killed somebody. So he has to go to San Francisco and find out if Eddie's really changed and if he's really toying the line instead of maybe picking up the phone and phoning him.
I feel like a lot of the time when Spider-Man appears in someone else's comic, he's really dumb.
He is. And in this, he is so dumb. I don't understand how someone as smart as Peter Parker and as battle-hardened as Peter Parker, and as, I don't know, by the end of this comic, he must be pretty sweaty, so I'd say as sweaty as Peter Parker. And also, this does the typical early 90s thing, the typical early to mid-90s thing, of really objectifying the female characters in some way. And
oh, is it one of those, hello, I'm Dr. Bikini, I suffer from horrible scoliosis, so I have to stand with, like, my hips jutting out of the page.
Well, it's not so much that.
I mean, my hands are busy with science, so I'm just going to have to balance these two melons on my chest.
It's not so much that. It's more they looked at what Image Comics were doing and they thought, oh, Rob Liefeld, he's doing some interesting stuff. Let's copy his artwork. And so you have blatant copies of the artwork. David Michelinie wrote this. And it's got the art by Ron Lim and Mark Bagley. And some of the artwork really is so 90s it hurts. Eddie Brock, for example, is wearing a crew cut mullet.
Oh.
Excellent.
Oh, this was during the Marvel mullet phase.
Yes, it was. He's got a flat top and a mullet. How do you manage that?
I don't know, but like that was the superhero look.
Yep.
The Brock Sampson.
Maybe that was it. Tribute to Billy Ray Cyrus.
Oh, God. Was the Marvel editor-in-chief at the time such a big fan of Billy Ray Cyrus that he wanted all the characters to look like him?
That's right.
I mean, Billy Ray Cyrus is a Marvel superhero.
True. Go back to the design of the female characters, for example. Peter has to ring Mary Jane at one point, and Mary Jane has just finished her exercises. And she is wearing leg warmers, as you do, because this is apparently still the 80s and not the 90s. Not sure.
I mean, to be fair, the 90s were also the era when all the editors inexplicably decided that leg warmers were sexy.
Yeah, and they aren't. They just look like your socks fell down. So, yeah, she's wearing leg warmers and a T-shirt and possibly a leotard. I'm not sure, because the leg is so high cut on it, it's like it's almost legs straight into shoulders. It's almost into Rob Liefeld territory.
And yet, weirdly, Mark Bagley also did the art for Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yes. So, yeah, it's... Oh, and I forgot, she's wearing a bandana as well.
Of course she is.
Nah.
Because nothing says, I have been working out more than a bandana.
But nothing says, this is a 90s comic more than a bandana.
Yep. So, yeah, this is a... The thing is, you've got to remember, it is from the early 90s. It's 26 years ago this comic was made, a quarter of a century. And it hasn't...
this comic is as old as I am.
Yep. It hasn't aged that well, but it does have some interesting ideas in there. It does have some... It does present Venom as an interesting character. It does present Eddie Brock as an interesting character. But it does also make him a little bit Bruce Banner-ish, so to speak, in that, you know the TV series of The Incredible Hulk? You know, I can just imagine Eddie going from place to place, because he's now all about protecting innocent people, by the way. He's not all about that.
Just as he always has been.
Yeah, I know. And so...
Push you in the back.
Yep. But the thing is, the way he protects them is by being extra violent on everybody else. And that's how he justifies him saving the innocents, because he literally gets to... And it's kind of the purest justification for superheroes, for superhero logic that I've seen in a comic book. Eddie Brock and the symbiote, Venom as a character, they love protecting the innocents and upholding justice, because they get to literally beat the living out of the bad guys.
I think that's it. We've got the 90s trifecta.
Yep.
Terrible fashion, objectified women, ridiculously overly violent anti-heroes.
Yep. And yep. Venom, Lethal Protector, is all of those things. And
what was the thing again? Something Venom Extreme Protector, did you say?
Venom Lethal Protector. I know, it sounds like
a brand of condom.
I was about to say that.
that's the only way to make this comic more 90s. The Extreme Protector.
It should be given away on a little thing on the front page of issue one. You should have had like a little bag with it.
Oh, no. If there was a chapter title in here that said Ripped for Her Pleasure, then I would have just thrown this at somebody else and said, I'm not touching this.
I imagine that's what all the ladies say to Venom as well.
I mean, the first chapter is called Dark Soul Drifting, Lethal Protector Part 2, War and Pieces, which was also a Incredible Hulk mini-series.
You know, that's a genuine question I have, Dan. Like, how many stories can you find that are called War and Pieces?
I don't know.
Because I bet there must be a ton.
There probably are. I mean, chapter 3 of this is A Verdict of Violence.
That's just a Perry Mason case.
Exactly. It literally is. Was it? Chapter 4, The Deadly Birth, which looks like
someone didn't get their Lethal Protector on.
Yes. Oh God, this one's kind of glorious and cringeworthy at the same time. Part 5, where Eddie Brock may be dead, is called Symbiocide.
Oh no.
I felt you cringe there, Mick.
Man.
I actually felt you cringe there.
I bet that's what's written on the underneath of Venom's skateboard as he like smashes through a wall whilst wearing a backwards baseball cap.
Yeah. Part 6 is called Frisco Kill. Okay, it's not too bad. But I just want to read this last bit out, just because this is the end. This is worth reading if you want to know a little bit about Venom. But I'd say, and I'm pretty sure about this, the movie is probably not going to be following this version of Venom. Probably going to follow the modern version of Venom rather than the 90s version of Venom. But this is still one of those interesting stories from the history of Venom as a character. But the last words that Eddie Brock says in this comic are, "We will be your friend and more. From this day forward, all innocents can consider themselves under our protection. And whoever would dare do them harm will answer to Venom." How 90s is that?
I really want to hear Tom Hardy say that.
I know.
What a terrible mullet wig.
Oh, Tom Hardy's terrible mullet wig is just something that we want to see.
And then possibly he breaks into a rendition of Achy Breaky Heart.
And on that note, we are indeed at the end. So, yeah, our shows are available on our website and on Audioboom and Apple Podcasts. And we have Patreon as well. The links are on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk. You can find us on Facebook or on Twitter at 4panel podcast. Was it, Andrew?
You remembered the name all by yourself.
Yes, I know.
That's it. My work here is done. I can ascend to the heavens.
Yes.
And if you're based in the Northeast, you can hear us live. Well, almost. Live in a recorded sense in Geek Corner.
Unless we're actually in Geek Corner, in which case you can hear us live.
Yes. We are occasionally in Geek Corner. We don't shout about it when we're there.
No, we don't. We're incognito.
Indeed.
Well, I'm back from the heavens.
Yes.
They wouldn't let me in.
Yeah. I kind of figured.
I got to the gates and they just laughed.
No, a shocker.
No, he's saying they just laughed, but he's. I actually think he got to the gates and all the lights were off and they were pretending no one was in.
And as I walked away, all I could hear was some sad piano music coming from an unknown source.
So anyway, that's it for us. Until next time, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick. And I suspect I will be again next week.
Yes. We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.